Welcome to another edition of Garden Talk. I'm Larry Mueller here. Thanks for joining in today as we visit with Melinda Myers, nationally known gardening expert, TV and radio host. She's an author, columnist, over 30 years of horticulture experience. She's written more than 20 gardening books. So we'll start out with her today by talking about your leaves. If you are like me, you've got some leaves still sitting on the lawn, unfortunately. But we can take some other questions as well, and I hope you'll join in the conversation. Give us a call at 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234. Email us at ideas@wpr.org. Melinda Myers, welcome back.
Thanks. It's always great to chat with you and your listeners, and even when the weather isn't conducive for gardening.
You know, with the leaves, I wanted to start by talking about them. I have a mulch mower, and so when the leaves come down, I mow them, and I don't do anything else with them. It just goes right back into the lawn.
And that is the best way to manage them, because as long as they're the size of a quarter or smaller, as you know, or you can see the leaf blades, then you're fine. The problem is, unfortunately, this year,
yes,
a lot of the leaves came down with the snow. So hopefully I talked to gardeners who were out in the dark the night before the snow was predicted, trying to do exactly what you said. And you're right, even if your leaves are pretty deep, a couple passes, or I like to sometimes, if I have a lot of leaves, run my mower over, put the bagger on the mower, though, capture those shredded leaves so I can either use them as mulch on the ground around my perennials, bag them, and this might be what people are doing for added insulation for those plants that didn't get in the ground. I'm sure I'm not the only one that has a few plants and bulbs that I'm hoping for the thaw, the warm spell.
Well, you're right about that snow, because there were still a lot of leaves left on the tree, the yeah. main tree, which is the neighbor's tree, which branches over the top of my lawn.
Okay.
and they came down, and so there they sit.
And the reason we care about them on the grass is, as you know, is those big leaves trap moisture, block the sunlight, so it increases your risk of disease. If you can't get out there, if the snow continues to fall in the spring, or if we ever get a thaw again, get out there with the rake and get them off. You don't really want to run equipment on frozen grass. You know, it got covered with snow as it was actively growing. So, you know, if you can wait for things to warm up so the grass blades aren't frozen and, you know, they're full of ice crystals that will break and you'll have your path from your mower to watch for several months. But, yeah, so that's why we care about getting them off, to reduce the risk of disease and the blocking of the sunlight. And hopefully we'll get a warm spell, right?
Yeah, let's hope. Do you put the leaves in your compost pile, mulch leaves?
I do. It seems like I never have enough for all my leaves. My first thing is mulch, and I have to tell you, I have a wonderful man that works with me and helps me weed, and the first year I'm like, oh, we're going to mulch with leaves, and he's like, oh, okay. You know, he's more of a neat and tidy kind of guy, and the next year he goes, those are the best thing that ever, the weeds didn't come through. He goes, you need to get more of them. So, you know, it's one of those things. I find many gardeners have that same response that, oh, and then, of course, compost, you know, amending your soil, making your own is a great way. One of the things that, and it's you're very much the same kind of gardener as many of the listeners, is we like to keep those resources on our property.
Yes.
And by recycling them and by composting and improving the soil, we also keep water where it falls. And that's important. And a lot of these tips are on Fresh Coast Guardians' website, freshcoastguardians.com, so that it helps you find ways to be sustainable. You'll save money. I think it's easier to mow leaves than to rake them.
I do too.
Yeah.
I do
and then
too.
They're shredded. So, not that I can't, I mean, I probably could use the workout, but yeah. And then you're saving money and time and keeping them out of the street. I think one of my pet peeves is when I drive through and see people have raked leaves, as their municipality tells them, into the street. Then it rains. They end up getting washed into the storm sewer. The street and sewer people have to come and clean out the storm sewer. Pollutants have gone into our waterways.
Yeah.
You know, so we're going to have to spend more money to clean our water. And then people are parking over them. And it's just, you know, if we can help people find ways to use them on their property, that's, you know,
that's
a free resource. Yeah.
Well, we have some callers online with questions. Let's go to Nancy and Sheldon first. Hi, Nancy.
Good morning.
Morning.
Hi.
Good morning. I have a question about strawberries. I'm going to put in, got the ground all worked up, you know, put cover over it for everything to dissipate. And this next spring, I'm going to put in a new strawberry bed, not a real big one. But we're in zone 3 or 4, not a real weak 4, I would say, over here in Sheldon. And I wanted to know what kind of strawberries you would recommend planting. And then I compost and put compost in, but what kind of fertilizer should I put in with the strawberries?
You know, I'm going to put a plug in for the UW Extension Learning School. They have a great publication, Growing Strawberries in Wisconsin. I'm still going to answer your question, but if you're like me, somebody answers a question, I hang up, and then I'm like, what did she say?
Forgot everything, or half of it.
Exactly, and it's winter could be long. So there's a couple of things. On this publication, there are great great recommendations for the north and the south. So there's a map of Wisconsin, and then by each of the different varieties, they talk about, is it good for both? Like Annapolis is a good north-south early season June bearing. And then you can get some that do mid-season, like honey eye. I never can say that one right. We need our fruit specialist here, which is an early mid-season and has good disease resistance. And so that would be one. And the reason I would recommend you go through it also describes the flavor and the timing. And it's free. So you go on, if you have access to the internet or go to the library and just type in growing strawberries in Wisconsin, and that will come up. Because June bearing, you'll get one big crop. The day neutral and ever bearing will produce several.
Yeah.
One I've had fun with, and I grew it, and I haven't talked to anyone in zone 3 that's grown it, but you might want to try in a pot. There's an All-America selection called Deliz, D-E-L-I-Z-Z, and it's a strawberry. You can start from seed indoors. You know, kind of when you start your broccoli or Brussels sprouts inside, plant it and you'll have fruit the first year. And my plants are 3 years old, and this year I harvested 2 huge containers early in the season. I had some problems with all the rain with some disease, and the animals then found them. So the ground squirrels ate a lot of the next harvest. But they'll bloom and produce fruit throughout the summer. And so, and the flavor is excellent, and that's Deliz or Deliz, D-E-L-I-Z-Z. It's an All-America selection. A little hard to find plants yet. I did get some mail order, but the seeds, it's fun. You can start strawberries from seeds and have strawberries the same year. So you
that's
might want to,
amazing.
You know, maybe a little patch of those, but lots of good things. TriStar is a great one. There's just, that's ever-bearing. TriStar is one of my favorites as a day neutral, so you'll get a repeat bloom. So that's good. Compost, excellent. Feeding the soil. Avoid high nitrogen fertilizers that are going to produce a lot of leaf growth, because this first year, especially with June bearing, you want, with all of them, some good root development and then flowering and fruiting. So the compost is a good start, a low nitrogen, slow release, you know,
we'll
organize what I choose to use, but you may choose some other brand, and a slow release feeds slowly over time, and that'll be really all you need to do.
Yeah, there you go, Nancy. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call. Well, let's go to Dean and Verona next. Hi, Dean.
I have a question about decorative conifers. In the last couple of seasons, the winter has been pretty harsh on the conifers, getting a lot of dieback from being windburnt or whatever, too cold. So I have one, a decorative one, that's very close to the house, but I was wondering about putting some stakes in and perhaps some burlap around it to protect it from the cold and elements of the winter.
Yeah, you know, especially new plantings, boxwoods took a beating last year. anything that's exposed to winter wind and winter sun, the ground's frozen, the plant still loses moisture through the leaves and needles, and even though it can't pull up moisture from the ground. So anything that blocks the wind, maybe a little bit of shade too, is helpful. So evergreens on the south side or on the northwest side, wherever the prevailing winds are. You know, my house, I feel like they just go circle my house. It doesn't seem like there's, you know, any place that's better. But even if you don't wrap them totally, just creating a break, there's lots of products available you can buy that are a little more decorative. Burlap is fine. There's green burlap, too, especially new plantings. If you didn't get things watered and we do get a thaw, luckily, we have plenty of rain in this fall as well, so the thing should be pretty good. Mulching the soil, you know, who knows? We may get that warm spell, and that's what I'm banking on to try to take care of those things I didn't quite button up correctly. But I think doing that would be, you know, especially if you're concerned. Sounds like it's in a prime location, too, so the last thing you want to do is look at a dead evergreen next year. And then once it's established and you have a chance to evaluate the growing conditions a little better, you could decide maybe even just a piece of decorative fencing or your, you know, your Christmas tree. If it was locally grown, we don't want any of the, you know, the insects that have tagged on to greens and wreaths from other states to infect our landscapes. But if you have a locally grown tree, I like to put mine out and use it as a windbreak for plants as well as shelter for the birds. So that might be a little more decorative since it's by your front door. But I think that's probably, if you're concerned, probably worth doing.
Yep, there you go, Dean. Thank you so much. Well, Bill in Racine has a question, I believe. Bill, hi. Thanks for calling.
Yeah, thanks for taking a call. See, the question, it's kind of a two-part deal, and this is on corabels I have.
Okay.
My question is, I'm kind of new with the corabels. I'm just wondering, should these corabels be cut back to the ground? I'm figuring that every all the snow is going to melt. Should you cut them back to the ground and wait, or wait till spring and then just remove the leaves that are dead? And the second part with the corabel, should you use some mulch on the main stalk, and what type of mulch?
Good questions. I'm glad you brought it up. Corabels, one of my favorite perennials, but they are subject to frost heaving. So when we get a cold snap and then we get that warm spell and then it gets cold, the soil shifts and often pushes things like corabels, sometimes our bulbs, sometimes daylilies up out of the ground. Last year I saw a lot of frost heaving on my corabels, and so I just went around and tapped them in. But one way to prevent them is, one, I would leave the leaves, as long as they're healthy and free from disease, leave the leaves intact. That provides added insulation. If you're worried about frost heaving, if they're in, like, next to the house on the south side where it's more subject to freezing and thawing, after the ground freezes, this is the key thing, let the ground freeze. After it's nice and crunchy, you know, you can't get your trowel through, that's when we mulch. And you can use straw, you can use evergreen boughs. Again, if you've got a Christmas tree, usually mulching after the holidays is when, you know, again, a local Christmas tree, Wisconsin grown, take those branches and cover the plantings, because it's usually, you know, but who knows anymore, in the January, February, we get that thaw, that freezing and thawing. So the ground needs to be crunchy, not a frost, but a crunchy ground, and that snow's insulated the soil a bit. So make sure the ground's frozen, then you can cover it. Or check in spring. You want to remove the mulch as the temperatures are hovering around freezing. But then if you've noticed that they've heaved out of the soil, gently press them in back into the soil. And if they've really badly frost heaved, you may have to dig a little bit air of an area and then reset them. Pretty tough plants, though. Wonderful. So much variety. So they're pretty tough and hardy, so you should be okay. But those would be some good preventative measures for this first winter.
And Bill, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. Well, we are visiting today with Melinda Myers, our nationally known gardening expert. She's a great website, melindamyers.com. Hope you'll go to that. And if you have a question for her right now, I hope you'll join in. The number to call is 1-800-642-1234 or email us at ideas@wpr.org. Dave Potratz, our engineer today, Jill Nadeau, our producer. I'm Larry Mueller for Garden Talk here on the Ideas Network. Great to have you along today for this edition of Garden Talk. Larry Mueller with my guest, Melinda Myers. Questions for Melinda? Give a call at 1-800-642-1234. Email at ideas@wpr.org. And Melinda, you mentioned earlier, fresh coast. And that got me thinking about the great little piece of information they have on rain barrel care. And this is certainly the time, I guess, to be thinking about rain barrel
Hopefully
care.
You did it. If not, it's time to get out there. I think we're getting over freezing temperatures, some of us. I'm sorry for those that aren't. But you're right. If you've got a rain barrel, you're absolutely right, Larry. If you haven't winterized it, now is the time. If we leave them out there full of water, that water freezes, expands, the plastic cracks, you get backups, it's a mess. So you're going to want to drain them. And if it's frozen, you may have to get friends to help you to get it into a warmer spot, or hopefully we'll get a little bit of warmer weather. So you're going to want to drain them. You're going to want to clean them out if possible. Flip them over to get all the last of the water. Rehook an extension onto your downspout so that the water is taken away when we do get those winter rains away from your foundation. If you have room to store your rain barrel inside, that's obviously the best. You'll extend the life. Take any hoses along with it. Hopefully you've got your hoses inside, your other hoses inside for storage. And then if you can't get it inside, cover it with a tarp just to keep it dry and protect it from the weather. But you're absolutely right. There's good information on installing them. So if you don't have a rain barrel, put that on your list of things to do next year. There are some really nice decorative ones, and sometimes we gardeners don't want to spend the money on that, but the holidays are coming up, you know.
And sure, so why not?
I said, don't give me a microwave, but you can give me a load of manure, you could give me a rain barrel, pruners, all those things. I'd make me a happy person. So, you know, it might be a good gift to give someone it or to receive as well.
Yeah, and in December we have one of our Garden Talk shows.
That's
and
right.
Jill will remind me, is gifts for gardeners. And so rain barrel will definitely come up on that particular show. Oh, and, you know, along with this, I went an email from Simone. Wondered if you have any ideas about how to redirect water coming out of the side of the house from the sump pump in the basement to some sort of water container that she could use to water the garden.
You know, I visited a really cool rain garden on a small city lot in Milwaukee where they used a piece of PVC pipe to redirect the water from their sump pump into their rain garden. So I thought that was a really cool idea, so that they just directed it into the garden. There's also have been a couple of different kind of inventions where people are using rainwater, but you could use your sump pump too. You'd want an overflow that they're collecting it like in a bench. There's also this cool product, and I don't know if you could use it from your sump pump, but I wouldn't see why you couldn't, called Rain Garden, GUARDEN. So it's this raised bed, really designed to take water from your downspout, but I bet you could rig up, it'd give you inspiration on how you could put the water there. But what's cool is it holds about the same amount of water as several rain barrels. It has a planting bed on top, and these are plants like a rain garden plant. So it's kind of like a raised bed, rain garden, rain barrel all in one.
Oh, my goodness.
And they're very attractive. And what's nice about them is because, you know, small city lots, you don't want your rain garden right next to your house. But this is a raised bed, like a rain barrel situation. So you have a garden, you have an attractive setup, and it's called Rain Garden, GUARDEN, that she might want to check out as well. Or just divert it to like a rain garden that you set up away from the foundation of your house. They ran the PVC pipe along their fence, along the side, and I thought, what a good creative solution.
Yeah, that's great. And I've got to look up this rain garden, GUARDEN, and see what that's about. That sounds really interesting, and I haven't heard about that one.
Yeah, if you folks that visited me, not this past year, but the year before, they lent us a traveling version that we had at the We Energy Energy Park Garden.
Oh.
So that was kind of fun. So maybe we have to see if we can get it back again.
Okay. Well, lots of callers, so let's go to Carrie in Milwaukee next. Hi, Carrie.
Hey, thanks for taking my call. I sure appreciate it.
Sure.
I'm a 42-year florist, and I am honored to talk to you today, Melinda. I had planted a stargazer, gorgeous stargazer lily in spring, and then it went to seed. Can I plant those seeds in spring? I dried them, and I'm keeping them, you know, dry storage.
Wonderful. So seeds, not the ball bills, not the little black things along the stem, but seeds from where the flower faded?
Exactly.
Okay. And you know this, but listeners might not, so thank you for letting me kind of extend your question a bit. So, yes, you can. Because it's a cultivar, as you know, it may or may not come true. From seed, bulbs take anywhere from 3 to 5 years, but, you know, that's one of the joys of gardening, right? One is to see if you can make it work, and two, what's the surprise it provides. So, yes, I would give it, you know, store it in your refrigerator just to keep it cool, consistently cool. You could start them inside or plant them outdoors directly. And then putting them someplace where you'll remember, just so you don't accidentally weed them out, because they're not going to, you know, they'll be kind of, I've done that with things. I forgot. I collected the seeds and they look like grass on my tulips and I was like, oops. So, you know, just kind of somewhere where they could be a bit protected. For those that are listening, especially tiger lilies, not the day lilies, but the hardy tiger lilies with the orange flowers, the black specks, a lot of our hardy lilies form these black little things called ball bills at the leaf, base of the leaf, right by the stem. And those will fall down and those will grow into bulbs eventually. It takes a few years too. So just thank you for letting me expand on your question, because there might be people going, oh, I had those. I could plant those. So thank you. And let us know how it turns out. And you'll have to post a picture on our Facebook pages, mine and Larry's, I'll still be in business a few years from now. I'm not retiring. I don't know about Larry. You can't
no,
retire,
I'm not
so.
Either.
Okay.
That's Carrie, thanks so much.
Thanks for calling.
Appreciate it very much. Well, let's go to Tim and Rhinelander next. Hi, Tim.
Hello. Hey, thank you, Larry. Mm-hmm. I have two questions. The first one is, with all the bad storms that we had this summer, I had a couple, not a couple, several old growth pines on my vacation property just blow over. I mean, it's taken me this long in therapy to get over it. But what is a fast, the first question, what is a fast growing conifer or something that would probably kind of repopulate somewhat quickly? And my second question is it possible to get maybe a sequoia to grow in this climate here?
Rhinelander.
Yeah, so I have to tell you, Mary Brownrider, who used to be a gardener at our Berner Botanical Gardens, now she's at the Domes, brought a sequoia back. I don't think it's still there. She had it alive. She had it tucked into a very protected spot in their gardens. I don't think it's still there. I think it made it for 5 years, but that's Berner Botanical Garden.
That's Milwaukee.
Yeah, exactly. You know, if you really were daring, maybe you pot one up and out in the summer and in an unheated garage for the winter and hope for the best. I mean, that's one of those I would try one and know that it's going to be one of your slowest growers. So, you know, not going to give you really quick results. One of the challenges with things that grow fast is those are things that often, you know, don't live for a long time either. So that's one of the challenges. You know, it's like our ash trees and our silver maples that die in the storms because they break apart and those kind of things. Did you have white pines before? I apologize if you told me what kind of pine.
No, I had white pines.
White pines.
Okay. And those are really beautiful.
Yeah.
And they're very well suited for the area. Pinus sumbra is a Swiss stone pine. It's not as big and open. you know, red pines are what they use a lot in native planting areas and wildlife, and it's a native plant. You know, I think sticking with a native in your area is probably going to be your best choice. And picking up the pace is going to be tough. You know, doing a more fertilizer, a low nitrogen, slow release. We don't want to push a lot of top growth at the expense of roots. But usually we don't fertilize trees very often. You know, you put them in the ground, give them a year, you could fertilize then. Every year, if you fertilize, you want to just do a slow release, make sure you're not overdoing it, but that might give it a little more nudge than just letting it try to go on its own.
Yeah. Tim, I had a similar situation. We in Bayfield County, we lost ours.
Oh, no.
In a kind of a windstorm, but we put in some red pine, and, you know, it didn't take all that long for those little red pines to get pretty good size, you know? A few years, but they come.
Yeah, but and they're native, and so they provide a lot of shelter and habitat. And I feel your pain. Our woodpeckers disappeared for a month, and we couldn't figure out why. Well, we found out the tree where they were fell over one of the big branches in the storm. And they had to find a new home, and they're finally back. And so that's not like losing a whole bunch like you did, but I understand. It's hard to see big trees go. So well, thank you, Larry. You got the word from someone who's in the same boat as you. So maybe give those a try.
Thanks, Tim. Appreciate your call. We had, Darcy called to say she wants to put a raised bed over grass. And she wonders, should she do anything to the grass beforehand or just put the raised bed right over the top of it?
You know, what she can do is just edge the area when she puts the raised bed and cut the grass really short and then throw newspaper or cardboard to help smother it. And then I'm assuming she's going to have at least 12 or more inches of good planting mix, and that should be fine. One thing I did not do to my raised beds I put in my big garden area, and I read about it later, was somebody recommended putting hardware cloth on the bottom so that the ground squirrels are less likely. I mean, they can still climb up and go down, but they won't have this racetrack going underneath and out the top, you know. And I was like, oh, I wish I would have done that. Now I have, you know, I'm not taking the soil out, but that might be one thing. And if you're doing this because of black walnut, some people are using raised beds because of the black walnut roots, the toxicity, I would line it with landscape fabric, that black fabric, to help discourage the roots from the black walnut growing up into your raised bed. That's just if you've got problems with, black walnuts, and that's why you're making a raised bed. But, yeah, you can put it right on the existing soil. The only reason for the newspaper or the cardboard is just to smother the grass and the weeds just for extra insurance, and then that, you know, your good quality planting mix on top.
Jared in Two Rivers. Hi, thank you for calling.
Hi, Larry. I just wanted to comment. I work for a municipality, and right now we are knee-deep in our leaf collection season.
Oh.
And I wanted to comment on Linda's comment about her pet peeve of putting leaves out into the street and it getting into the storm sewers and everything like that. One thing that it does create, not only do the leaves go into the storm sewer, but it creates leaf tea when it rains, and then that washes into the storm sewer. And this season for leaf collection is pretty crazy. The other day it was like plowing snow and pushing leaves at the same time.
Thank you for sharing that and for expanding on that, because you are so right. We all think about pollution and all the sources, but sometimes we forget some of those things that are right in our face. And when I worked for the city, sanitation they managed leaves going, can you get all those leaves off our last pickup this November or whatever? And I'm like, no, I can't shake those trees. So thank you for that additional information, and hopefully that'll help motivate people too. So, and hang in there.
Yeah, Jared, you're doing good work there. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate it. Well, We have Susie in New Berlin up next. Hi, Susie.
Hi. Hi. My question is, I carefully collected all kinds of seeds from prairie flowers all fall, and some of them I mixed with some compost dirt and some sand, and I was getting all ready to broadcast them into the area for next.
Sorry to laugh. I hear you.
And so, you know, 3 snows and 11 degrees last night and all of that. What should I do with them? I mean, those I can't dry out.
Yeah, they're in the soil
some
already.
Some of them are dry, and I'll be able to wait until spring. But what about these? Should I try to broadcast them anyway? Or?
Yeah, you know what? I'd hang on to them, keep them in a cool, dark spot, and just see what happens. I'm hoping we get a little bit of warm weather. I may be overly optimistic. The other thing, and I don't know, you may have too many to do this, but there's this cool method called winter sowing. And it works great. You take milk jugs, cut about 4 inches above the bottom, the gallon milk jugs, and leave just a little bit right by the handle so it's a hinge. Drill holes in the bottom. Fill it with a good quality potting mix, and then you can sprinkle your seeds over it. You maybe need a lot for as many as you have. I first would try to broadcast them, wait and see, you know, even if the ground's, you know, the snow disappears lightly, you know, rake it to try to get some good seed-soil contact. But winter sowing, the idea is you tape that shut with moisten the soil, use duct tape, take it shut, take the cap off, put it in a space where rain and snow can keep it watered. I've started some cold weather vegetables. I've started some perennials. I've started some native plants and had good success. No lights, you don't have to worry about watering, having somebody babysit while you're out of town. It's amazing. It's called winter sowing, and I have a tip on my website. But I'm hoping that you're going to be able to store those in a cool spot until we get a little bit of clearing or just lightly rake the soil and then spread it and broadcast. How big of an area are you trying to?
Yeah, how big, Susie?
Oh, I don't know, like 30 feet by 10 feet.
Ooh, okay.
That's a lot.
That is a lot. Let's hope for, I'm looking at very little snow right now, and I forget where you're from. I'm sorry, Susie.
New Berlin.
So, you know, we're supposed to get above freezing temperatures, and tomorrow is supposed to be nice. So, and my soil's not frozen yet because the snow's insulated it. And the snow's really starting to recede I'm looking out my office window and seeing more grass. So I think you might have a chance to do it tomorrow and get it in the ground.
Good luck. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call. Well, Nancy in West Salem, what's on your mind?
Hi. My thing is I have my leaves fell like all at once. So I rake them up and put them on the side of my house to wait for the ground to freeze to cover my roses.
Okay.
And we got this dump of snow and the ground wasn't frozen. And I wanted, can I put those leaves on top of the snow or should I rake the snow off so the ground can freeze? Because it's supposed to be like 8 or 9 degrees at night. And then wait for the ground to freeze and put the leaves on.
Yeah, I would wait for the ground to freeze. My concern is if you're insulating it and then you're going to have other kind of issues.
Yep.
So that winter mulch idea is to make sure things are good and dormant before we cover, especially with roses. You know, sometimes we'll have roses flowering in December, not this year because of the cold, but wait till we get, you know, the ground is good and crunchy and hard. And I know this year is just going to be one of those years we're going to all have to adapt to this crazy weather.
There you go.
Sorry. I wish I had. I'm sure that's not the answer you wanted, Nancy. Sorry, but I think you'll be happier in the spring if you wait.
There you go, Nancy. Thank you. Nick in Milwaukee. Hello to you.
Hey, Larry. I got a quick question. I spend a lot of time over in O'Connell County, and if there's a heaven, that's where it is. But with the tornadoes going through, I didn't realize how bad it was. It's horrible. Is there anything that people can do to, like, kind of kickstart the trees back? Because there's thousands of trees that are just gone. I mean, this place is where I spent time. I don't even recognize it anymore.
Yeah.
So on your own personal property, you know, downed trees do provide some shelter for wildlife. So if it's not a hazard, you know, the woodpeckers and all of those. And I realize you have more than you need for wildlife habitat. Many counties, the Department of Natural Resources, often conservation programs within counties offer some trees and shrubs, natives, at very reasonable prices to help with those kind of situations. So you might want to check with your county. You might want to check with the local, the regional DNR forester to see if there are any programs like that. For people who are managing trees anywhere on their property, having a good relationship with a certified arborist, a tree care company, you know, obviously tornadoes are going to take things down. That's just really terrible and impossible to, you know, to prevent. But a lot of our high wind damage to trees, a lot of people that have good regular pruning done by a certified arborist, they're training their trees from a young age, find they have a lot less damage when storms move through the area because the trees are more structurally sound. Plus, if you have a relationship with an arborist, you're going to be at the top of their list when damage occurs because they have a relationship with you and know your trees. So that's a really good question. Larry, are you aware of anything that you always know so much? I don't.
I am not. No, you have some good advice there. That's about all that was running through my mind as you were talking. I don't know what else you can do. We had a similar situation in the Shawamigan National Forest. This is a long time ago. The blowdowns were just awful, and I couldn't recognize an area that I had frequented for years and years. And over time, it didn't come back quite to normal, but it did come back. And, you know, it's like a 20-year process. So you've got to be young enough to be able to see the end of it, Nick. But a lot of it will happen. Mother Nature will take care of a lot of it.
It is amazing how fast things recover. Not always the things we want, but
right.
There was a show one time about, you know, if people weren't around and they showed cities that had been abandoned and how the plants just, you couldn't even find the buildings. And not that those are necessarily the things you want to see, Nick, but I would call your county extension office, the DNR. I'm guessing, you know, and you may even find that there are community groups that are feeling the same way you are and may be organizing some things. Because planting trees are important, and Larry's right, a lot of things over time will change. And nature will kind of help fill in, but we can lend it a hand. So thank you. That's a good question. And you may be getting other people thinking about it, too, so that will help.
Yep, for sure. Thanks, Nick. Appreciate it very much. Well, Melinda Myers, our guest today. I'm Larry Mueller, and you are listening to Garden Talk here on the Ideas Network. You're listening to Garden Talk on the Ideas Network. I'm Larry Mueller. Thanks for joining in today as we visit with Melinda Myers, nationally known gardening expert. She's got a great website, melindamyers.com, and Myers is spelled M-Y-E-R-S, melindamyers.com. You always have lots going on that site, and you've got all kinds of things going on at all times of the year, I swear, Melinda.
Well, you know what's, I think, so exciting, and you experience this every week with Garden Talk, is, you know, there's always been a big interest. Gardening's the number one or two hobby in the world, but I'm finding so many new people get excited and interested. I'm calling houseplants kind of the gateway into gardening. So finding a lot of people who've never gardened and maybe have limited space are starting with houseplants, and that's how I got started. So I'm doing quite a few talks on houseplants. Tomorrow I'm speaking at the Conservancy Healing and Heritage Garden, talking about growing microgreens and veggies indoors and forcing bulbs and all the things that make us feel good and help us get through the stress of the holidays, the gray days of winter. And so I'm so excited to see so many more people adding house plants, you know, extending the garden indoors, or growing veggies inside even. There's so many new light structures that really expand that opportunity. And we're reserving, I'm scheduling in the next year or two for talks around the country and throughout Wisconsin. So it's always fun to meet with gardeners. It's always a good time.
It is indeed. And Stella in Sturgeon Bay has a question for you. So let's go to her. Hi, Stella.
Hi. Actually, I have a suggestion for a safe and useful disposal of leaves.
Good.
We have a backyard chicken flock, and we have a winter pen and a summer pen for them. And in the winter pen, my husband, we collect leaves and put them in the pen to about mid-thigh deep. And then we also, over the winter, will add some straw bales for the girls to check through. And they scratch through all those leaves, and they poop in them all winter long. And the deep litter keeps the pen. There's never any smell from the pen. Mm-hmm. And then in the spring, we move them to their summer quarters and take all those leaves and compost them over the summer, and then that's what we use for potting soil to start all of our plants in the greenhouse in the next spring, and then also we plant in the winter pen, we plant our winter squash, and they just grow like crazy because there's very nicely fertilized soil there.
Oh man.
That is great. I'm finding more and more people raising chickens. So
yes.
A lot of people are going, yay, this is great. and I just want to do a mention, too, and I hate to even bring up such a negative topic, but jumping worms we're always concerned about. So if you keep your leaves on your property, you know, if you've got jumping worms, well, you're not adding, you know, it's... You know, you've already got them. But if you don't have jumping worms, but you get leaves from somebody who does have jumping worms, that sometimes they can be transferred. So, you know, the whole composting, the temperatures, I think it was UW that did the research, 104 degrees. You know, so it's just one thing to be careful, not to make people paranoid, but, you know, use your leaves on your property if you're concerned about jumping worms in your area. But this is a great idea. Thank you for sharing it.
Yeah,
Stella.
Thank you, Stella.
That's great.
Appreciate the call. Bill in Madison has something for us. Let's go there. Hi, Bill.
Hey, thanks, Larry. So this weather kind of snuck up on me. And
me too.
I still have dahlias and cannas in the ground, and the ground is covered with snow, and I don't think it's frozen.
No.
Do you think I should just go, should I bother to dig them up, or do you
think
they're okay? Or
I'm banking on doing some bulb planting this weekend, so I haven't put a shovel in today, but I'm hoping. I might be out there in the dark after my classes tomorrow, but I think it's worth it. You know, you have nothing to lose. Well, I shouldn't say you have your time to lose, but I agree. The soil really, the snow's insulated. Yes, it's been down to 6 or 8. Last year I was planting bulbs when it was 9 degrees, but I just had to break through like an inch of crunchy soil, and that's helping to insulate those too. So that's a good thing,
Then I will dig them up tomorrow.
It's supposed to be 39 or 40 degrees in Madison tomorrow, so.
Heat wave. Yeah, so good luck. I think you'll be okay. I'm banking on being able to cheat the weather a little, too.
You can join in, too, by the way. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234. Love to hear from you. Barb in Green Bay, it's your turn. Hi, Barb.
Yes, I have a Schefflera plant, had them for 40 years, but it's having rust streaks on the bottom of the leaf, and it does not go through to the top of the leaf. And I just wondering what that is.
So it's rust-colored and it's streaked? Is that what, am I picturing this right?
Right, and it's not in the veins or anything. It's just like spots and streaks.
Do Do you know what scale? It's not scale insect that can rub off. Can you rub this off at all with your
thumb? It's kind of actually pitted into the leaf, but not through to the top.
Hmm.
There is a problem. I don't see it a lot on Chef Lair's, but there's a problem called oedema, O-E-D-E-M-A. And you may want to do an internet search and do images just to see if what I'm picturing and you're describing are the same thing, you know, how that can go. And oedema is, sometimes you'll see it on ivy geraniums. We can see it on some houseplants, but it's usually a problem where the soil stays wet, the plants aren't losing the moisture as fast as the moisture, it's not good take up and transpiration. And so it ends up forming almost like these blisters that can be corky and almost like a pit. It doesn't hurt the plant. It's a physiological disorder. That's the fancy word for saying it's not a disease. It's not an insect. But that might be the case. So just, you know, it sounds like you've had this for 40 years. We've had a lot more gray days this year, and maybe, you know, the watering schedule is a little different than normal. We've had pretty cool temperatures, even though it's inside. The outside weather affects, you know, the inside climate. So I'd check out oedema to see if the images you're seeing, and there's nothing you can do but adjust the watering, make sure when you water thoroughly, pour off the excess. You know this. You've been doing it for 40 years. And then, you know, it just may not be drying out as quickly because of, you know, because of the grayer days outside. So just kind of check your watering. And the good news is if it's oedema, it's not a disease. And so those things will stay there, but the new growth should be fine as long as you adjust your watering.
Barb, thank you so much. Appreciate it. Tom in Neillsville. Hi.
How's it going?
Good. Appreciate the call. What's on your mind?
I have a couple of apple trees at about 4 feet tall. I have some pear trees about the same height and some grape bushes I started over the summer, and I was unable to get them protected for the winter. I was out of town a lot. Can I bring those indoors now that they've seen the cold for a week, and will they make it through the winter?
So these are all potted?
Yes.
Okay, thank you. That was my question too, Larry. So here's one of the things that I'm looking at, a few things sitting right outside my unheated garage that I'm clearing a corner to put in there. I'm worried about if you bring them in the house, it's going to be too warm and the light intensity won't be great, and it'll be hard to keep them dormant. You know, if your basement is cool enough, you might have some good success there. I find with an unheated garage, I try to put a board on the floor, an old carpet. In some cases, I'll use bags of shredded paper or potting mix or anything stuff that's in my garage just around the roots to insulate them just in case it gets really cold. I have really good success moving things in an unheated garage if you have access to that. And then just water whenever the soil is thawed and dry. So when people usually lose their plants in an unheated garage, it's when we get that warm spell in February. The temperatures go up, the soil thaws, it's dry, the roots desiccate and die. They dry out and die. I think you'd have better success doing that. If you can get it in the ground, just sinking the pot in the ground, you know, if we get that thaw, digging a trench, burying the pot, top of the plant out, but covering, we want to just insulate the roots. That's really the critical part. And then putting them in a sheltered location just increases your success. So I would try those two things rather than bring them in the house. I think you'd just have much better success.
Yeah, makes good sense. Tom, thank you so much for calling.
Thank you.
And let's see, someone wondered, Eric wondered if you would repeat the name of the garden barrel. I think you just called it Rain Garden, right?
Right. And if you do an internet search, it might take you a while. It's called Rain Garden, like you guard somebody, G-U-A-R-D-E-N, D-E-N like a garden outside. So it's kind of a guarding the water and, you know, the rain. So Rain Garden. It's a really cool, very stylish. You know, I think what's nice is they've done a lot of installations in, like, Shorewood, which is a community on the lake that has a lot of tiny yards, some in Milwaukee. And I think what's nice about it is it's attractive. It can be up against the house like a rain barrel, but you can have plants in there. So it's really nice because I think it gives people, especially those with a small lot, some options. And I don't work for them. I just thought that was a cool, it's a cool product that, like you said, Larry, you never heard of, so many people haven't. So you might want to check that out.
And Gary says he's been saving his coffee grounds. Can he use them in his lawn or garden?
Yeah, coffee grounds are great. Best in the compost pile. Some seedlings and some plants are somewhat, they can be toxic to some plants. Working it in your soil works great, putting it in your worm bin. If you compost it first, you avoid any of those issues with that. And toxicity is a little strong word,
yeah.
But for the plants that are sensitive, you could put a little bit on the soil surface of your house plants and lightly work it in. It's organic matter, low nutrient value, but it's a great, great resource. So and the filters are recyclable, too. I throw the filters and the grounds in my worm bin or my compost pile, both.
And that works great. Gary,
yeah.
Good question. Thank you so much for calling. Melinda Myers, our guest today, nationally known gardening expert, TV and radio host, author and columnist, over 30 years of horticulture experience. And go to her website. It's melindamyers.com. Melinda Myers, and Myers is spelled M-Y-E-R-S. melindamyers.com. I'm Larry Mueller for Garden Talk here on the Ideas Network. Are listening to Garden Talk on the Ideas Network. I'm Larry Mueller. Thanks so much for joining in today. We have Melinda Myers with us by phone, actually. She's a nationally known gardening expert. Her website, melindamyers.com, talks about her speaking engagement. She's got lots of great tips and information on it. So I hope you'll join in with your questions and comments. You can reach us at 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or email us at ideas@wpr.org, ideas@wpr.org. Mary Ann in Monona emailed us to ask for advice on planting a gift. She got some California poppy seeds as a gift. She doesn't think they'll overwinter. When should she plant them in the spring? Melinda.
You know, good question, and they're so beautiful, and you're right. Often they're included in wildflower, quote-unquote, mixes,
yeah.
And so they'll pop up. So when you can get the soil, you know, as soon as you can work the soil in the spring, you can sprinkle those down, and you'll get them jumping up. You could start them indoors so that you have a little more protected site. You could try also doing winter sowing. It might be a little iffy, but you know, once the soils have thawed and the worst of the weather has passed, you know, you can even wait a little longer. You'll get a little bit later bloom, but or start them indoors when you do your, you know, about the time you do your Brussels sprouts and broccoli, like mid to late March. You could start them indoors because they do like that nice cool temperature. Sometimes when the heat gets intense, they kind of fizzle out. But yeah, you're right. They won't make it through the winter reliably. So start them in the spring and enjoy the bloom.
You mentioned Brussels sprouts, and boy, this fall there were some nice nice sticks of Brussels sprouts that I didn't have. I didn't have any myself. I didn't grow any myself, but there were some really good ones out there.
The cool weather, I'm a fan of Brussels sprouts.
Yeah.
I never have to share. Nobody in my family likes
them. I love them, too.
And this cool weather, ideal, and the, you know, a light frost on broccoli and the Brussels sprouts just sweetens up that flavor. So it was a really good year for Brussels sprouts. You're right. I like them plain, and I try to just hide them with bacon for those non-Brussels sprout eaters.
Well, Going from Brussels sprouts to horse chestnut here for just a minute, Ed emailed, and he was stratifying a horse chestnut in the refrigerator, and it unexpectedly germinated while being in the refrig. He planted it in peat, the roots growing. At what point, if any, should he give it some dilute phosphorus or other general fertilizer?
Yes, I'm guessing it's now in a sunny window, sunny window.
That's my guess.
I would use just a very dilute solution of like a flowering houseplant fertilizer, just because some fertilizers that are made for the outdoor plants don't always smell real good. Like Milorganite has that nice earthy smell, which we love, but outside is better than in your, living room or bedroom. So, but a very dilute solution, just keep in mind, they're talking about actively growing plants. And this time of year, our goal is just to keep the plant alive. Now, if it's in straight peat moss, you might want to consider getting a good potting mix. That'll help hold the moisture, but also increase drainage. Peat moss can be a little tricky to garden if it's straight peat moss. I'm guessing that's what you had them packed in to get them to get their chilling over winter. So I would transplant it into a container with well-drained potting mix. That's going to have some fertilizer anyway. So then you probably have several weeks and then monitor the plant. And if it looks like it needs a little nutrient boost, if the leaves are pale and you know it's getting enough light, you know it's not too hot, then you might want to then use the fertilizer. But I think I'd transplant it first, get some good, quality potting mix there, and then worry about fertilizing. And let us know how it goes for you.
Yeah, for sure. Abby in Menominee has a question for us, I believe. Hi, Abby.
Hi. I have a pathos plant. I've had it for a few years, and it's almost grown around the entire room, but the leaves are starting to fall off the vine, and it looks, it doesn't look as beautiful. Will those leaves come back, or are they gone for good?
So good question, pathos and philodendrons. And are they kind of by the window? And you said they're vining all over. Is it in front of a window by any chance?
It goes around my whole room, and the leaves are starting to just fall off, and I'm not sure.
So the reason I ask about the window, but if it's been there for years, you're probably okay. But sometimes when we get really cold weather outside, sometimes we need to move our plants. It won't be possible for you, but move our plants back away from the window where it's really cold, because cold blasts of cold air, drafts of cold or hot air can be hard on the plants. If it's big and you haven't transplanted, it might actually be pop-out. They really are tolerant of that, so it might be time to get somebody to help you, but to move it to one pot size bigger so that that plant can not only have room for those roots to get more moisture and nutrients. Don't go too big, because then the soil stays too wet and soggy and you end up leading to root rot. If you pinch out the growing tip, so that new point at the end of the stem, if you pinch that back, that removes a hormone called auxin, A-U-X-I-N, just a bit of science for the day, and then that allows the plant to branch out, and so that encourages branching and new leaves to form where old ones fell off. So that can help kind of thicken up that plant a bit as well. The other thing you can do is take cuttings and put them back in the container at the base if that's where all the leaves are yellowing and dropping, and then get new vines going to kind of fill in as well. So when you transplant it, if you're putting a lot of new plants or cuttings in there, you might even be able to go a little bit bigger.
Yeah, that's a good piece of advice there. Thank you, Abby. Appreciate the call.
Good luck.
You can join in, too, at 1-800-642-1234. Give a call. We'll get you on pretty quickly here. Or email us at ideas@WPR.org. Christina in Mount Horeb emailed to ask how to protect her yuccas from the rabbits. Last winter, the small yucca was completely covered by snow and made it through without being eaten and managed to flower this year. The larger ones were all mowed down right at the snow level. they spent the whole season growing back.
And isn't that just frustrating? How could those kind of spiky little spiny leaves be appealing? But they are. So any way you can physically keep the rabbits out, you know, a ring of hardware cloth, a little fencing, you know, they can slither over. I've seen them go over a three-foot-high fence or use a baffle bent out. If you use repellent, start now. Things like plant skid, they do smell, but I have gardeners tell me they've had good luck. Liquid fence, there's all kinds of different products out on the market, but the key I find for success is start treating before they start eating so they find somewhere else to go. But physical barriers are probably your best. You know, even some people have put cages, you know, you need to not put a trash can over it, but even like a wire cage over top anchored to the ground to keep the rabbits out. You want to make sure you don't create an environment and trap the rabbits inside so they have food and shelter all at once. But, it took me all summer to get the rabbit relocated out of my fenced-in garden, let me tell you.
Oh, boy. Well, Bob in Sun Prairie has something for us. Let's go to Bob. Hi, Bob.
Hi, I got a question about my hostas. In the fall, they get this long stem on them and a whole row of tightly gathered, I guess they're seeds. And okay. I've cut them off and just let them dry. And when they dry, they kind of pop open, and then there's these little black specks, which I assume are the seeds coming out. And I'm just wondering if I would have any success replanting those if they would grow.
Oh yeah, actually some of the new cultivars are from seeds. People will start plant the seeds and see what comes up. Usually not often the same as the parent, which can be where we get some of our introductions, and some of the new hosta varieties are sports or mutations off of an existing plant. The juncos, for those that maybe aren't as ambitious as you are, the junco birds will eat the seeds, so it's kind of a nice food source for them. But yes, you could definitely, you know, once that seed pod dries, those seeds are mature, I would just, you know, put them in an envelope in the fridge over winter and start them indoors or plant them out in the spring. I'm not sure, you know, if the birds will pick them out of the soil. You could put some in the soil and see. But I would try starting them inside. They may be sterile depending on the cultivar, but I think it's worth a try.
Sure.
You can just get a small container and give it a shot. Maybe you'll have a cool new hosta that people will want.
Well, there you go, Bob. Thank you so much. Jeanette in Chippewa Falls, it's your turn now. Hi, Jeanette.
Good afternoon. I was just going to say I've had great luck with just sinking pots when I have plants in pots outside that I didn't get taken care of. I just sink them in the soil.
Exactly, and that works great. That's the easiest way. I wasn't sure if his soil was, you know, how frozen things were, but yes, sinking in the ground is a great option. The other option is, the other thing I've done is if the soil's frozen or I didn't have space when I was in the city, I'd put all my perennials and trees and shrubs, some that I left out year-round, some that I didn't get planted, I'd put them together so they help insulate each other. Then I took all my annual pots, things that were going to die, I didn't empty them into the compost till spring, and I'd set those around for added insulation. And that's another way if you can't bury in the ground, because you're absolutely right. If you can sink those pots in the ground, that's a great way to preserve them over winter. The unheated garage is for those of us that don't get them in the ground before it freezes. And then that sheltered spot is another option.
And Ann in Sheboygan had phoned earlier and couldn't stay with us, but she puts her pot, she's got a pot that she puts in a box with styrofoam peanuts in the garage.
Just make sure they're not the biodegradable kind, because if you do end up watering, they get kind of messy. But that's a great idea. You know, it's a good way to put. I've got some stuff delivered with that kind of air cushion plastic, and I wrapped it. I ordered figs that got delivered 3 days ago. Hardy Chicago. Yeah, they're not going in the garden, so they're in my garage and in a box with some of that wrapped around. So thank you, Ann. This is what I love about gardeners, always sharing things that work.
Yeah, absolutely. You can join in, too, at 1-800-642-1234. Give a call with your questions or comments. How'd your garden do this year, by the way?
You know, it did okay. Luckily, I have very sandy soil, so all the rain, I didn't have any flooding like so many people did.
Yeah.
Great bird activity. My tomatoes were okay. I'm still rotating. I think I have to rotate off my property because the disease problems. It was better this year than in the past. Great strawberries this year. What else did my artichokes? I only had about three. My figs were doing great, and then the ground squirrels ate the figs before I did. So, and the rabbit, I fed carrots until we finally got it to move on outside. But got a lot of things. I planted 1,000 bulbs last year, and you know, you forget the pain, and I'm feeling it right now looking outside. But this spring was so nice and cool. Anybody that planted bulbs or has bulbs, they lasted for weeks on end.
Yeah.
And it was
the best year ever.
Wasn't it? It was just so great. And if you bought bulbs and you didn't get them in the ground, or you don't want to pick through the frozen soil when it freezes or get out this weekend, forcing bulbs is a great way to add to the enjoyment. You know, pot them up and do all these things we've talked about. Either put them in an unheated garage or sink the pot if you still can, or if you have a spare refrigerator, to give them 15 weeks of a chill. And then come, you know, February, you pull them out of the cold. In 4 weeks, you'll have flowers.
Yeah,
you know,
perfect timing.
When we really need it. So, you know, I'm going to talk a little bit about forcing bulbs. And I just want to mention, too, I did some work with We Energies on Facebook Live videos. And we talked about house plants the other day and forcing bulbs and planting bulbs and growing things for kids. So check that out this winter. It's on the WTMJ website and the link from mine as well if you can't find it. And just, you know, we all need that inspiration over winter. So hopefully I'll help you get some ideas for next year as well.
You have cats, don't you?
Can you hear my cat? I thought, can you hear my cat? He's on my lap right now, right?
Oh, you know what? I wasn't even thinking. I did hear the meow right when I said cat, but he does not eat the plants, the indoor house plants.
You know, I'm glad you brought that up because that is one of the concerns. The American Society for the Prevention of Cruelty to Animals has a great website with plants. It's not everything, but it's a good starting point of things that are toxic and non-toxic. This cat occasionally will eat anything that's grass light or to annoy me. So I keep anything toxic in a room that he can't go into or up high. He's old, so his jumping isn't what it used to be. but you bring up a good point. I had a cat once that would use my big plants as a litter box. Chunky bark I found was a solution. I put big chunky bark in the base, and that discouraged her from doing it. My cats are unruly. I've met people that gave up on house plants because of, you know, their cats or their dogs. And so I just did a tip that will be posted in a few weeks on my website on gardening with pets, indoor gardening with pets, for that very reason. Putting things up high, hanging them from the ceiling. And I know a friend of mine's cat, who's young, he was demonstrating how high he could jump. So that wouldn't work for Ragnar. But, you know, some of those strategies, if you put chunky bark in the big plants, make sure it's something your dog, if you have dogs, aren't going to eat and choke on. And, you know, there are rubber mats that have little prongs that stick upward instead of putting them down, and that can discourage cats from digging. There are some safe cat and dog repellents that use herbs that may or may not work, but might be worth a try to keep your plants safe and, you know, enjoy your plants and keep your pets safe.
I have Limey, my lime tree. Yeah, Limey sits on a kind of a step stool that's about 4 feet high. And then inside, I have aluminum foil that I put down on the ground, you know, just kind of crunch it up and put it down. And Limey's sitting with, I don't know, maybe 100, 90 to 100 little limes that many will abort. But some bigger, there's a few big ones on there too that I've got to get off. In fact, I found one on the bedroom floor here yesterday that, how did I miss that one? So
the cat probably knocked it around, I'm guessing, right?
It probably. Oh, man. Missy emailed, by the way. She has a little kitchen window, a windowsill herb garden. She got a bay laurel plant. It's a 9-inch tall stem with leaves. Should she be pinching the top off to get some additional branches versus the height? And what's good watering for a sill garden like that?
You know, that's a really good question. Bay laurel is such a fun one to grow. You know, if you want a short, if you want to keep it short, I'd pinch out the growing tip to get branching. Otherwise, you might want to let it get a little taller and then pinch out the growing tip. It's not going to stop it from getting taller, but you're going to slow down the upward process. Good bright light. Again, watching the grass, bay laurels can take it cooler, so that would be fine. Water thoroughly, and what I like to do is I like to put pebbles or marbles in the saucer under my plants. When I water, the excess collects there, evaporates, and increases the humidity around the plant, and then I don't have to empty it, and saves me some work as well. And so that's a great idea. Windowsill herb gardens, if you don't have light, there's lots of cool new light features. Anybody that joined me at the Garden Expo last year, I had a booth there, and I had a bamboo LED light fixture from Gardener Supply. It's a furniture grade. You can get stackable, make them tall, make them short. Great full-spectrum light, so you can grow a lot. They now have a little mini one that can go on your countertop, just because I find light is also an issue. Pets are one thing, but light often limits our ability to grow inside. And so there's lots of products out there on the market that can help as well. So if she's running into problems, because even though it's a window, may not be bright enough for that bay leaf, bay laurel plant, but she should probably be okay if it's in the window.
Connie and Anna Antioch, do you have a quick question for us?
I do. Thank you. I purchased, because you talk about limey all the time, I tried to find a limey, and I end up with a limey. a lemon tree this summer. I had it out in the yard, and it was doing fine in a pot.
Yep.
It did lose a lot of leaves initially. It has about 9 lemons on it right now, I'm very happy to say, and it's had a couple of new blossoms since I brought it in the house. But it's continuing to lose lower leaves. They become like along the center of the leaf. It turns sort of pale yellow, and then it spreads, and the leaves eventually fall off.
And that's a common thing, and I don't know if you experience much. I have a lemony, too. I was looking for a limey, and mine's in bloom, and I've lost some leaves. Just that change, that transition from the intense light outside indoors. And then a lot of energy is going into the flowers and fruit, which we want, right? But the plants, the leaves that are on there are developed to block out some of the sun so the plant gets what it needs. We bring it inside, it's blocking out some of that sun that it needs, so if they drop the leaves, it'll put on more shade leaves, those that the cells are arranged to absorb as much light as possible. And so it's a matter of just continuing to give it good care. Eventually, and Larry, you probably have some words of wisdom, too, because you've had limey a long time.
Yeah, I use a fish emulsion fertilizer. That's all I use. Put a little in the water when I water her, and that's the only fertilizer I ever use, and I get tons of limes. On that note, we are out of time, Melinda.
Well, it's been fun. Thank you so much, and thanks to everyone who joined us this morning.
Melinda Myers, our guest. Go to our website, melindamyers.com. Always fun to have her with us. And I trust we will have her back. Just a reminder, part of our show, if you want to hear it again, just go to our archives at WPR.org/Larry. I'm Larry Mueller. You're listening to Garden Talk. Stay with us. Lots more in store on the Ideas Network.